Funding for Smart Talk is provided by Capital Blue Cross. For 80 years, Capital Blue Cross has offered products that provide peace of mind and promote good health, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like its Capital Blue Health and Wellness Centers that provide in-person service and inspire healthy living. Capital Blue Cross is behind you for whatever lies ahead. More information is at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross. Live fearless. Smart Talk is also supported by UPMC Pinnacle, committed to reducing hospital-acquired infections and readmission rates. More information on UPMC Pinnacle's achievements in patient safety can be found at upmcpinnacle.com/quality.
Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. While on the campaign trail in 2016, now President Donald Trump railed against the North American Free Trade Agreement with Mexico and Canada, saying it was a bad deal for the United States.
I have very serious concerns about NAFTA. NAFTA's been a catastrophe for our country. It's been a catastrophe for our workers and our jobs and our companies. They're leaving our country. I want to change it, and maybe we do it. Maybe we do a new NAFTA, and we put an extra F in the term NAFTA. You know what the F is for, right?
Yeah.
Free and fair trade.
Since taking office, Trump has changed his position somewhat, saying NAFTA should be renegotiated so the U.S. can get better terms. So far, that hasn't happened. Farmers in Pennsylvania are watching the negotiations closely, since 37% of all agricultural exports from the state go to Mexico and Canada. At the same time, many rural Pennsylvanians, including farmers, voted for Trump. Pennsylvania farmers and NAFTA. It's the topic of our first portion of today's program. Joining us is Rick Ebert, who is president of the Pennsylvania Farm Bureau. Mr. Ebert, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Scott. It's great to be here with you.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532, or send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. So when you hear the president say that the U.S. will pull out of NAFTA, he said there it was a catastrophe for the United States. Now he's talking about renegotiating. What do you think?
I think it's really great that we got him to actually take a look at the ag sector. I realize NAFTA was a huge agreement all across all sectors of, you know, both agriculture, manufacturing, pharmaceuticals, everything like that. But I didn't think the president really realized the impact, the positive impact that NAFTA has for American agriculture.
When the president said catastrophe just there in that clip, it has not been a catastrophe for agriculture, has it?
No, not at all. Actually, when the agreement was signed in 94, we were really only doing about $8 billion worth of trade between Mexico and Canada. Last year alone, we were up over $38 billion in agricultural trade of U.S. agriculture products leaving the states to Mexico and Canada.
Well, those numbers say a lot, but be a little more specific. How have Pennsylvania farmers benefited from the NAFTA agreement?
For Pennsylvania, you know, we have a huge export market of fresh vegetables and fruit going into Canada. I know for Mexico, they buy a lot of dairy products, more from the south U.S., but still products from leaving Pennsylvania. Fruits and nuts are a huge plus for Pennsylvania leaving for export.
See, I don't know, fruits and nuts, that kind of surprises me somewhat. First of all, you know, yes, we have a large fruit industry. I think of apples and, you know, some of, you know, here in South Central Pennsylvania where mm-hmm. we have so many fruit farms. But you would think with Mexico's climate that that's not something that they would need imported, but they do.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, you figure how warm their climate is. They probably can't grow some of the fruits and nuts that we can grow.
Like what?
Probably the apples, the peaches.
So with what the president is talking about with NAFTA, would you prefer to leave it alone, period? Or is there an area that you would like to see negotiated, that renegotiated, I should say, that would benefit Pennsylvania farmers?
There was always rooms for improvement. I know Canada has always been a hard nation to get into for dairy products. We're always sort of at odds. Canada has a dairy quota system in place. So they're very protective of their dairy farmers. And in the Northeast here, we're actually struggling with a surplus of milk right now. So we'd like to see some of the restrictions that Canada places on our dairy products that, to get into.
And by the way, that's a good segue to say that in the second portion of our program, we're going to be talking about the dairy industry here in Pennsylvania, that they're actually, and one of the reasons is because of that surplus you're talking about, but there actually are some dairy farmers that not necessarily selling off their farms, but are deciding to sell their cows and to make other crops and products their focus. By the way, if you have an interest, if you have a question or a comment for Rick Abbott, Pennsylvania Farm Bureau, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. That's 1-800-729-7532. Doesn't have to be necessarily about farming, but it could be about NAFTA. What you think about the Trump administration maybe pulling out, but at this point talking about renegotiating NAFTA. Has it benefited the United States farms in particular, or are there some things that you feel should be changed? That's 1-800-729-7532. You mentioned Canada. There always is so much emphasis when we're talking about trade on Mexico, because, and as you mentioned earlier, we're not just talking about agriculture, but we're talking about manufacturing, pharmaceuticals. And when the president talks about a catastrophe, I think what he's referring to is the loss of manufacturing jobs for the most part here in Pennsylvania and across the nation. But it is a little bit of a surprise that what Pennsylvania farmers, that the issue that you have, that you mentioned right off the bat with NAFTA, has to do with Canada. Talk about how Canada's policies have put Pennsylvania and the United States at a little bit of a disadvantage when it comes to farm exports.
Okay. A good example is milk. We used to ship a lot of ultra-filtered milk products into Canada. Last year, they changed the way their pricing policy was on these products, and they actually priced us out of the market. So there was quite a good bit of milk leaving, Pennsylvania, New York, Wisconsin, that was going into Canada. And when they changed that pricing policy, they pretty much took us out of the market for that. So there's all that milk that's still staying in the U.S. that we could be exporting.
When you say change that policy, I assume that what that means is that Canadians could buy milk at a lower price?
No, they actually, just the way they're protecting their market. They created a new class of milk price for ultra-filtered milk products. And when they did that, they actually priced us out of the market.
When you say ultra-filtered, what does that mean?
It's high-temperature milk that has a long shelf life to it.
Mm. We have a phone call here from Bill in Greencastle. Bill, you're on the air.
I just wanted to trying to figure out, like, I live right on the border of Pennsylvania and Maryland, and how is it that you go $4 a gallon in Pennsylvania for a gallon of whole milk, but I can go right across the border and it's only $1.40 a gallon?
That deals with our Pennsylvania Milk Marketing Board. They regulate the classes and prices for milk, and that's how that's actually priced. Those other states can use milk as a loss leader, where I'm not quite sure what year the Milk Marketing Board was created, but the reason behind that was to make sure there was a good supply of fresh milk coming from Pennsylvania farms.
But, and you actually can find a gallon of milk in Maryland for $1.40?
Yes.
Really? I didn't realize the difference was that big. Hey, thank you very much for your call. Okay, now this doesn't necessarily or directly relate to NAFTA, but it can, in that when Pennsylvania farmers, especially dairy farmers, may be at a disadvantage, shouldn't that Pennsylvania Milk Marketing Board take that into account?
No, not really, because that's not the way the law was written. The only thing that Pennsylvania Milk Marketing Board can regulate is milk produced, processed, and sold in Pennsylvania. as fluid milk. So that only represents like 15% of the milk production in Pennsylvania. So all the other products have no regulation under that board.
But at the same time, when you say the way that the law was written, they have to be aware, the board has to be aware of the challenges that milk producers are facing.
Oh, absolutely. They are. They're very aware. And you know, it's a constant struggle between what they price Pennsylvania milk at and from the surrounding states.
And again, we're going to be talking more about dairy in particular in the second portion of the program. When we were talking about Canada, we talked about dairy in particular, but also the timber industry. Domestic timber industries have complained here in Pennsylvania and the United States that Canada's policies unfairly benefits loggers too. Now, I don't know whether that comes under the heading of agriculture, logging, but is that something that you've seen too?
I've seen some of that. I'm not that familiar with the hardwood industry. I know hardwood is huge in northern tier Pennsylvania, and there's always disputes between different commodities like that. You know, I know with Mexico, milk is huge going into Mexico and pork and that, but I know we have a concern with fresh fruits and vegetables being dumped into the U.S.
Like what?
Tomatoes. I've heard tomatoes for Florida and California and that. Tomatoes are brought in a lot cheaper than what the domestic market is priced at.
You know, when I think about that, you know, it depends on what time of year it is. Mm-hmm. But in the last few years, there has been a real effort to buy local. And to buy local from, you know, fresh food, fresh vegetables, fresh, you know, fruit, other commodities, other food products. That would seem to be something that would benefit Pennsylvania farmers in particular.
Yeah, absolutely it would. And actually, Pennsylvania has the highest retail sales, local markets in the U.S., even over California. I think as huge as California is with all their fruits and vegetables, Pennsylvania ranks number one with their retail farm markets.
How do you measure that? Do you know?
USDA statistics.
Okay.
Yeah, NASS and that.
Why is that? Why is Pennsylvania number one?
Well, if you look at Pennsylvania has 12.5 million people. We're close to huge metropolitan areas. And that buy local, buy fresh trend is taken off for farmers.
We'll talk a little bit about politics here. President Trump won Pennsylvania in 2016, and he dominated the rural counties of Pennsylvania. So many of your members probably supported the president. Why? I mean, he campaigned against NAFTA. That was one of his big focuses during his campaign, is that at that time it was eliminating NAFTA. Pennsylvania farmers knew that they were benefiting. Why did they support the president then?
I think it was probably a lot of different reasons. The president was looking for less regulation, less government. As farmers know, you know, we have more and more paperwork we have to fill out. We have more and more regulations we have to follow. It's a huge burden for Pennsylvania farmers.
Are there regulations that have been rolled back on Pennsylvania farmers since President Trump took office?
Yeah, probably one of the hugest ones is the Waters of the U.S. rule by EPA. If you've followed that at all, there was a lot of uncertainty with that rule. American Farm Bureau had done a study of Pennsylvania. Well, they did all the states, but if actually the Waters of the U.S. rule went into effect and was pushed to its outer limits, 99% of Pennsylvania would have fallen under that rule and would have been subject to permitting, just EPA's jurisdiction.
And just to provide some background on that, I remember when that first was proposed during the Obama administration, that the Pennsylvania Farm Bureau, and there were many others who thought that it did go to extremes because it would designate, there were people who said puddles on the road could be designated as waterways and would have to be permitted. Mm-hmm. And so is that what you're talking about when you're talking about the extremes of it?
Yes, yes. Anything, I mean, there was part of the rule that, you know, anything that had close proximity to a navigable water And actually expanded the definition or took away the definition of navigable waters, could be regulated. I mean, it could be your downspout on your house could have been regulated because it had water. But our biggest concern was all the dry land that would have been regulated.
Rural communities, when we talk about agriculture, obviously most farms are in rural communities. So the discussion goes to not just farming itself, but the health of rural communities. With getting back to NAFTA, if NAFTA would be renegotiated or eliminated, how would rural communities in Pennsylvania be affected?
Well, with the agriculture community, you know, if we've had that loss of exports, you'd see farms go away.
You actually would see farms go away?
Well, to a point. I mean, you know, you figure 95% of the population in the world is outside the U.S., so we need those exports. You know, with $38 billion worth of goods leaving the U.S., I mean, that's a huge impact. So if you have farms either going out of business or changing operations, you're changing the infrastructure. The ag community relies on a huge infrastructure for support. You figure the trucking, repairs, veterinary services, a wide range of research that supports the ag community. You know, if you figure for every farmer, look at the support system that keeps that farm going. So that would be a huge change in the dynamics of the atmosphere of jobs.
Earlier you talked about the number of jobs that Pennsylvania has gained in the agriculture industry as a result of NAFTA. I doubt that, you know, that 37% of all agricultural exports would go away if that be the case, where those jobs would be lost, but there would be some lost. Any estimates as to how many job losses there would be in Pennsylvania's ag industry if NAFTA went away?
I'm not really sure what that figure would be, but, you know, it, like I said, it would change the dynamics of you know, the support system.
One of the results of NAFTA is that low prices for food exported from the U.S. to Mexico drove many Mexican farmers out of business. And what happened is many of those people who worked in the agriculture industry in Mexico decided to come into the U.S., and many of them came into the U.S. illegally. This was another campaign part, in fact, it's still today, is probably the main focus of the Trump administration. I know immigration, illegal immigration, is not at the top of Pennsylvania farmers' list, although we are going to talk about immigration in just a moment. But is there a concern at all that how Mexico's farms have been impacted? I mean, obviously, you're looking out for Pennsylvania farmers mm-hmm. and how they benefited, but there are some unintended consequences here, too.
Yeah, I mean, with any trade agreement, you know, there's going to be winners and losers. You know, yeah, we are concerned with the immigration. I mean, actually, immigration is one of the top priorities for Pennsylvania and American Farm Bureau. We need a legal immigrant workforce. You know, we don't really support illegal immigration at all. You know, we want people to come in that are willing to work. We need these workers for the farms, but we want them to come in legally.
If you didn't have that immigrant workforce on Pennsylvania farms, would there be Americans who would take those jobs?
We're not finding Americans taking those jobs.
Why is that?
I think it's just the, you know, they're looking for a different lifestyle than the labor that's needing done on a farm. I mean, who wants to get up in the morning and milk a cow? You know, is that the first thing you think about in the morning when you get up? Oh, I think I'll go milk a cow today. Or, you know, or tend to animals or pick the fruit off the trees during the summertime, you know, when it gets hot. And, you know, you just can't find those laborers from U.S. force.
How much do those jobs pay?
They're a decent wage.
For the immigrants that come in?
Even for the immigrants, yeah. It's not like, you know, a $5 an hour job. I mean, you're talking, you know, a decent, decent wage.
What do you call it decent?
I know one farmer that did tomatoes, and he was paying $15, $18 an hour.
Is that typical, though?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you have to pay that because, you know, Nobody's gonna go to your farm to work for $5 an hour.
No, especially since it's illegal. But yeah. $15 to $18 an hour sounds like a decent wage that would attract Americans too.
Well, I guess it depends on whether you want to do the hard labor or not.
Rick Ebert is president of the Pennsylvania Farm Bureau, and Mr. Ebert's going to stick around with us when we talk specifically about the dairy industry. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.
Smart Talk is supported by Capital Blue Cross, providing health care coverage accepted by doctors and specialists in all 50 states. More information is available at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, live fearless. Smart Talk is also supported by the team of cardiologists, surgeons, nurses, physicians assistants, and rehabilitation specialists from Pinnacle Health Cardiovascular Institute, part of UPMC Pinnacle, delivering a broad range of traditional and highly specialized procedures.
Valentine's Day is just 2 days away, and as you're probably aware, we are in the midst of WITF's annual Roses campaign. I'm joined by WITF's multimedia news director, Tim Lambert. Tim, good morning.
Good morning, Scott. Great to be here.
It is. Roses. Tell me about the Roses campaign.
What can I tell you? I don't know. Let's see. You can go to WITF.org/roses and make your contribution in support of public radio and in support of that certain someone in your life that you want to show some appreciation to. Valentine's Day, just 2 days away, which I can't believe. So you can order a dozen red or rainbow roses for a contribution of $125. Or maybe if you just want to go a half dozen, you can make that contribution of $100. If you want to do the mic drop, that's two dozen red roses and a vase for a contribution of $250, and you can add a stuffed bear for an additional $10. But most importantly, you're going to be putting the smiles on the faces of the people that you send the roses to, of all of us here at WITF, knowing that we have your support, and also you'll be able to smile as well, knowing that you just made the days of a lot of people across the region. So make that contribution at WITF.org/roses or call 1-800-233-9483. So far, 53 gifts of roses headed out across the country so far, Scott.
Today.
Just today.
How many states are we up to now?
We're up to 43 states. I don't think our map is updated because I'm counting 8 states on the map, but our total was 43 for the drive. But it looks like West Virginia, of all places, still hasn't had some roses sent out, or Alabama or Mississippi, North Dakota, Montana, Ohio, Wyoming, and Nevada. Doesn't look like Alaska, and we need to zoom out a little bit more to find out if Hawaii is on that list as well. So, but a strong start, as we would hope, because just 2 days remain for you to make that contribution in support of public radio in central Pennsylvania. But we have roses going from Lancaster to parts unknown in Pennsylvania, also Mechanicsburg and Washington, moving out to New York as well. So the roses are moving out at a fast and furious pace so far.
And Tim, it doesn't just have to be for a wife, a husband, a spouse, a boyfriend, a girlfriend. You can just send roses to anyone you care about.
That's right. And I always like to point out that we've had a lot of some nasty weather lately. Maybe someone who's shoveled your driveway and you just haven't had a chance to thank them yet. So send them a half dozen red roses for that contribution of $100. Maybe send it to a hospital. Maybe send it to a daycare. Maybe send it to a senior center. Put a smile on people's faces and support public radio at the same time by going to WITF.org/roses or calling 1-800-233-9483.
Tim, we'll talk to you again in just a few minutes.
I look forward to it.
And Pennsylvania has the second most dairy farms in the country, trailing only Wisconsin. However, dozens of farmers are selling their cows and getting out of the dairy business, not necessarily farming. What factors are leading to the decline in dairy farms in Pennsylvania? Joining us and staying around with us from the first part of the program, Rick Ebert, president of the Pennsylvania Farm Bureau, Jane Seabright, who is executive director of the Center for Dairy Excellence, and Dave Smith, executive director of the Pennsylvania Dairymen's Association. Welcome, everyone, to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, Scott.
If you have a question or a comment about the dairy industry in Pennsylvania in particular, 1-800-729-7532 or send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, and I want to slow this down a little bit because I know we're giving another 800 number here for the Roses campaign. To talk on the program, to speak on the program during Smart Talk, it's 1-800-729-7532. Dave Smith, Are there people leaving the dairy industry here in Pennsylvania?
Well, there are some dairy farmers that are making the decision to leave the dairy industry and the business and closing the door, so to speak. Financially, some of the dairy farmers are struggling a good bit because of the price, the income to those farms. So we are seeing that happen.
And let's talk about some of the factors. And Ms. Seabright, let me go to you. What are some of the factors that are leading Pennsylvania dairy farmers to leave the industry?
So currently we're in a global recession in the dairy industry. We have too much product on the market globally, which is pushing down the price. The price is actually right now about $2 under where it was last fall, about $4 or $5 under where it was 2 or 3 years ago. For most dairy farmers, their break even is around $18 to $19, and right now they're receiving $14 to $15. So you do the math. If you're milking a dairy herd and you're losing $3 on every 100 pounds of milk that is produced, a cow gives about 70 to 80 pounds a day, you're losing a lot every day. So many farms have learned to manage the volatility, but when it's low for this long a period of time and this low, it becomes very difficult.
When you say this long a period of time, how long a period of time?
So over the past 2 years, milk prices have been lower than where they have. They've been low over the past 2 years with break-even prices.
Brighten someone's winter day with a gift of rose.
Go ahead.
they've been below break-even or at break-even for the past 2 years. And actually right now for the next 4 months, they're well below break-even.
You called it a recession. You know, we hear every day about how well the economy is doing here in the United States and really around the world. But dairy farmers actually see a recession right now.
Yeah, actually the ag economy as a whole is actually down right now. The overall economy is very good, but agriculture as a whole, even when you look at commodities, grains, other markets, we are in a lower price margin than we were 2 years ago. And it really has a lot to do with supply and demand. In 2014, milk prices were at all-time highs, and dairy farmers responded by producing more milk across the world. So all that product came on the market, pushing prices down and just caused a lower milk price. Here in the East, we're also dealing with a lower fluid milk supply or a lower fluid milk demand. So fluid milk demand's lower. That's traditionally been where a lot of our milk has gone. Supply is growing at the same time when demand is falling. So we have economies of scale.
Dave Smith, I know we're referring to that fluid milk. Maybe there's some specifics that you had that I know that you talk about all the time. One has to do with schools.
The whole milk situation in the country and in Pennsylvania is very, very dependent on some of the school issues and the consumption of milk, and that is a factor that plays very much into what we're talking about today. A number of years ago, there were some decisions made on the federal level about decreasing the fat and component level of milk in the schools for dietary reasons, and we dairy farmers believe that was the wrong direction to go. We like to see a full protein milk served in the school, and when it was pushed to skim milk, many of our younger children don't like the taste of skim milk. Milk is incredibly valuable to our children growing up for the calcium and the vitamins that are in it. And it's essential for those children to have milk and to grow. And when you decrease the protein and the butterfat components of milk, the taste is just not the same as a 2% or a full butterfat milk. So many of us think that we've lost a whole generation of milk drinkers because of that, because they do not like the taste. Now, we have turned the tide a little bit. Here in the last year, our new administration has brought back and allowed a 1% milk to be placed into our schools. So we're hopeful that trend will continue and that we can grow some more milk drinkers that way, and have those children drinking the right kind of foods and drinks. You know, obviously, we're committed to milk in schools and to children and the value of having them use that calcium to grow for their bones and everything like that, rather than fruit drinks, sugar drinks, and sodas. Obviously, if they're not drinking milk, they're drinking something else. So we really value having the right kind of milk in our schools. So it's very important to this whole issue.
What about chocolate milk? Because I have to admit that a few years ago when I heard that there was a move on to push chocolate milk in the schools, that surprised me a little bit. But it's not like this chocolate milk is unhealthy or anything like that, but as a way to get more kids to drink milk.
Well, absolutely. It is very healthy. In fact, there's incredible research that's come out in the last 5 years about chocolate milk being a recovery drink to athletes. And there's a really trend going on right now with athletes to have learned that milk is a chocolate milk in particular is a great refreshing drink and a recover drink after they work out and you know do whatever they do as far as an athletic event or workout or anything like that. The same situation it was with children. Chocolate milk has all the vitamins and calcium that regular milk has in it.
Mm-hmm. Rick Ebert, you're a lifelong dairy farmer, and I've seen you nodding along as our guests were talking about this. I mean, so what do you think when, first of all, we hear about a dairy recession, but that, you know, that something that was a staple of American schools when we were all growing up, milk along with your lunch, that was just, you know, that was a given. That's what we did, and that's changing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, I agree with Dave. I think when the federal level, when they started changing to go into skim milk and that, we did lose a whole generation of milk drinkers. I mean, even though as much as we push the health benefits and nutrition of milk, if you don't like to drink it, you're not going to drink it. Mm. So your tastes change. And I think we're just starting to see some of the changes in our schools. And, you know, at Farm Bureau, we would love to see whole milk back in the schools. And I think once they learn the taste of it, that we'll get our milk drinkers back.
And, I mean, this is something when we're talking about the dairy industry in Pennsylvania. I mean, this is one of the biggest industries in our state. So it probably surprises some people that there are dairy farmers who are not getting out of farming completely, although some have, I'm sure, because of the profitability. But at the same time, they're selling off their cattle.
Yeah, I mean, how long does a business stay viable when you're losing that kind of money a day? I mean, sometimes you just have to step back and say, you know, this isn't working anymore, and, you know, you find an alternative. You know, and I know people are looking at that.
So who's buying the cattle if Pennsylvania farmers, and again, not all, but we lost, I think it was 120 dairy farms in 2015 was the last year that I saw. So who's buying these cattle and for what?
So actually, our cow numbers in the state haven't dropped yet. We're at 525,000 cows, and it actually has been the same for about the last 2 years. We declined in total number of cows about 2 years ago, about 5,000 head, but we haven't really changed since then. So the cows are either moving to other farms or they're going to market for beef or something like that. So they're either being moved between farms or sold for beef.
Mm-hmm. Dave, there are other factors that are going into this as well. The value of the American dollar.
Well, I strongly recognize that our U.S. economy has been very good in the last several years to the people in the United States. One of the things that happens when that occurs is that when we have a strong economy here in the United States, our dollar, the U.S. dollar, becomes stronger in world markets. So what happens is our dollar becomes stronger, our products become more expensive to world countries around the world. So they will seek out markets for dairy that are less expensive. So over the last about 3 or 4 years, as our U.S. dollar has grown and gotten stronger, we've lost export markets for our dairy. I believe the number at one point 4 or 5 years ago, the U.S. dairy farmers exported almost 18% of dairy products outside of the country. So as our U.S. dollar became stronger, world markets sought out cheaper and less expensive products. And at this point, I believe roughly the estimate is that now about 14% of our dairy products are exported around the country. So that 4% drop in exports is just a phenomenal amount of dairy products. And that relates into all this conversation we're having about a depressed dairy economy. When you take out 4% of the U.S. Product out of the equation, you know, obviously we don't have place to go with some of that milk sometimes. That 4% in Pennsylvania alone, and these markets don't equal out throughout the state equally. But just for instance, that 4% in Pennsylvania represents about 250 herds.
And this goes back to the conversation we were having earlier in the program about NAFTA and Canada with, you know, some of what they've imposed, some of the challenges they've imposed on Pennsylvania, or into dairy imports, but Pennsylvania farmers in particular that have been impacted by that. Let's take a phone call from Kate in Gettysburg. Kate, you're on the air.
Hi. My question is related to what is your opinion, all of the people that are there today, on the fact that the drop in milk consumption could have something to do with the fact that people are doing more research on what is good and bad for their health as far as the use of hormones in the dairy cows. And I'll take my my answer off the air.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. Who wants to address that?
Well, go ahead, Jane.
Well, really, the decline in fluid milk, it has to do with more competition in beverage consumption. It's a trend that's just been changing. As far as hormones in milk, actually, I'm not sure exactly what you're referring to, but there are no artificial hormones given to cows in Pennsylvania anymore. They actually took that product off the market. So that's no longer an issue with fluid milk products. Now, hormones are naturally part of milk because it comes from a mammal, but there are no hormones given to cows in Pennsylvania anymore.
Over time, there seems to be increased competition of milk products in grocery stores as well. And I hear so much about soy, almond, goat, you know, others labeled as milk, but that it's not really milk. Talk about that, if you will. I mean, has this created competition for cow's milk?
I'd love to address that issue.
You seem very passionate about that.
I'm extremely passionate about this issue. Some of the decrease in consumption of milk is due to the fact that there's more competition. And we live in an economy that competition is good. I'm not going to debate that issue at all. But I think there's misrepresentation about the products that are called milk. And I think there's a lot of consumers that are being deceived about the products they're buying. And I'm talking specifically about the almond milks, the soy milks, anything that says milk. Those products are not milks. We haven't found a nut that creates milk yet. That cow's milk has vitamins and calcium that is not in almond and the nut milks that they call. The nut juices is what I'm going to call it. I think people should do more research about what they are buying. And I'm not going to say that there isn't a place for the nut juices, but they do not have the nutrition, the calcium, and the essential vitamins that milk has. So there's misrepresentation and some very misleading labeling going on about milk in the dairy cases. And I think I see that more and more. The nut juices are encroaching on the milk display areas, and I think people are being misled.
Are they healthier than cow's milk? Go ahead, Jane.
Well, the one thing I wanted to mention, even regarding the other question, is milk cow's milk is actually the most nutrient-dense product that you can consume. It's one of the nature's most perfect foods. It actually has 9 essential vitamins and minerals. Almond and soy milk and those other products don't naturally have that nutritional package that milk does. And for the health of our children, as well as our health, the nutrients that we get from milk are so important.
The nut juices also have sugar added, too. So the nut juices do not have the protein, they do not have the calcium, and the other essential vitamins that milk does.
Well, then why are people buying them?
Because it says milk on the label and they're being misled.
Mm-hmm. I also think it has a lot to do with the branding and marketing and them being positioned as a healthier alternative.
Okay, well, what way? I mean, if there's sugar in these things, do you think that people realize that there's sugar in? I see you shaking your head. No.
No, I think people, marketing is everything, and I think the commercials present them as a healthier product, and they don't really talk about the sugar. But if you actually look at the label of soy or almond milk, and you look at the label of cow's milk, there you're going to see a lot of things added to that product to make it what it is. And people don't naturally, they don't look at that label to realize all the stuff that's added to that soy product or that almond product.
Rick, again, I see you nodding your head.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything they're saying. I know Pennsylvania Farm Bureau and American Farm Bureau, we do a lot of things legislatively, and that's one of the big areas that we're looking at is the way things are labeled. You know, like Dave said, there's been a lot of misleading labeling and marketing done that, you know, people think that is milk, but it's not milk.
How should the label of those? I like the term nut juices. Yeah. I haven't heard that.
I've heard nut juice, too. That's what I call it, too. So.
How should they be labeled?
Well, I mean, we need to go through the process of through FDA and make sure that, you know, the correct labels are put on there. I mean, it's a process that we need to go through and make sure that things are marketed correctly.
Jane, one of the things I'd like to ask you about, you very early on in the program described this as a recession in the dairy industry, and you say that we have a glut of the product right now. Supply and demand dictate how many products are priced, how they're sold, consumers. So if there's a glut, doesn't that say that farmers are producing too many of these products?
So milk is highly elastic, and yes, some people would say that we're overproducing right now for the marketplace. Milk is highly elastic, so when there's too much milk, even if it's just 1% too much, the prices will respond accordingly. So yeah, we're overproducing right now. We are working as a state to look at more markets for that milk. We talked about fluid milk sales being on the decline, but overall dairy products are actually increasing in demand. And that is influencing our market. So we are overproducing a little bit now, but we're working to find new markets for milk and new demand.
I think one thing that people forget is, you know, if you have a manufacturing business, if you're starting to produce too much, you can slow that line down or stop it. I don't think you can walk into the barn in the morning and say, okay, Betsy, I don't need your milk this morning. I'm not going to milk you.
Are there a lot of Betsys?
I'm sure there's lots of Betsys.
Yeah.
And
got it's kind of a cliche name.
But I mean, we have all our cows named and everything, but, you know, but people forget to realize, even though, you know, we have an oversupply, you're still running a business, and that cow's still producing milk every day, so you just can't shut her off and wait for the price to come up.
Well, hence, that's why some cows are being sold. Dave, what were we going to say?
Well, agriculture production is just a different animal than all our other industries in the United States. It's just like Rick said, other businesses would shut down a production line, and they would lay off employees. We have our cows there. You know, we're going to decrease in our numbers just a little bit, but we have a different agriculture production is just a whole different situation, and I don't think the consumers in the United States would want us to be in a position where we would be short of food. Mm-hmm. So give credit to the United States farmers that they produce enough plus a little bit more so that all of our consumers have a food supply that is very accessible. And I think, you know, if you sit back, there are countries around the world that do not have that situation. And we do not want to be in that situation here in the United States.
You know, something else that is unique about farming as an industry, Rick, using your scenario of a product, a manufacturer shuts down a line. Maybe they lay off workers. So that would be unfortunate. Farmers don't do that for the most part, unless there are some people who are aiding in the milking of the cows or in that dairy herd. Question, and I don't think that you can answer this specifically. It's probably different for everyone. But Dave, how long does a farmer hold on? I mean, I think about this because there are so many factors that can influence the success, the profitability of a farm. Maybe bad weather one year. So one crop that is your specialty doesn't make out that well. Maybe it happens 2 years in a row because there's a drought or there are other reasons. How long do farmers hold on to, they've grown up in the dairy industry. How long do they hold on before they say, you know what, I got to make a change?
Well, there are about 6,500 dairy farms in Pennsylvania, and I'll tell you there's 6,500 different answers to that question because they are all diverse and unique in their own way. Many dairy farms are different in the employees they hire. Some may have farm or family members that help out, children. Many of them may have some side businesses that they rely on. In answer to your question, it's a unique and individual answer for each one of those farms of at what point do they make a change in direction. So many, many answers to that question.
Mm. Janet, I wanted to ask you, when we were talking about the glut, you mentioned that there are other dairy products that are doing well. I understand cheese is one that is doing well. What are some of the other products that have made up for kind of this recession in milk?
So, like you said, cheese is doing exceptionally well right now. Butter is actually on the increase in sales right now. There's been new research that has shown that dairy fats are very good for you, so the butter is increasing in sales. Yogurt continues to be a very popular product. And then also, like Dave had said earlier, dairy ingredients, export products, those are emerging markets for dairy farmers. A lot of third world countries are becoming more developed. And when you become more developed, you want protein because that is how you increase the health of your citizens. So they're purchasing more protein, more dairy proteins from United States and other key dairy exporters.
So what does the future look like? What would you like to see? Rick Eppert, I'll pose that question to you.
Definitely would like to see prices increase. I just think we need to work on our trade agreements more, get more product out of the United States. I mean, you get one, like Dave said, exports change a little bit, and that changes our price dramatically. So we'd like to see more trade agreements, more products moved out of the country.
Dave, what about marketing? I mean, everyone is familiar with the Got Milk campaign. Has that campaign run its course, or do Americans need to be reminded of how much they use dairy products, how much they like it, and the health benefits?
Well, that specific campaign has run its course, but the dairy farmers are united in helping to fund and run some new promotions. And they're always trying to be innovative about how they market our product. And our dairy farmers recognize that we need to market our products just like any other business in the United States. We are a competitive nation as far as our products, and we will respond to that whole issue also. It's the whole issue is a situation where we often talk about a large ship in the ocean is very difficult to turn and shift gears. Well, the United States dairy economy is the largest ship that we've ever seen in the world, and the shifting of direction takes some time, but we will do that because our dairy farmers are very resilient and dedicated to putting a great product out to the consumers.
I want to thank our guest, Rick Eppert, president of the Pennsylvania Farm Bureau, Jane Seabright, executive director of the Center for Dairy Excellence, and Dave Smith, executive director of the Pennsylvania Dairymen's Association. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Yep, thank you.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. We are in the middle of WITF's annual Roses campaign, with Valentine's Day coming up in just a few days, 2 days, in fact, to be exact. WITF's Morning Media News Director Tim Lambert is with us to tell us all about it.
Thanks, Scott. And yes, great start to the day. So far, we have 67 total gifts that have come in just 2 days before Valentine's Day. It's a chance for you to show your support for public radio in central Pennsylvania, and also for that special someone in your life. It could be your mother, it could be your father, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your husband, your wife, your aunt, your uncle, any family member that you feel has been an inspiration to you. It could also go to a veterans organization, a senior center, a school, a classroom, people who have been there for you, someone who's shoveled your driveway during the last couple of rounds of winter snow and icy mix we've seen the last few weeks, or maybe got your mail because it's too cold and you were sick and you couldn't get outside, someone who's helped you out. This is a chance for you to step up and to show your support with that $125 contribution. That means a dozen red or rainbow roses will go to that certain someone in your life. $100 for a half dozen roses. They could be rainbow or red. And then, of course, you have the $250 contribution, where two dozen red roses and a vase will go to that special someone. You can do that by going to WITF.org/roses or by calling 1-800-233-9483.
And I do want to point out that phone number, because earlier today I slipped on that phone number because I give another 800 number every day, and I understand that during Smart Talk we had some listeners who wanted to purchase the roses and make their contribution by calling the Smart Talk number. So let's point out that number again:
1-800-233-9483. And in just the last hour, we see roses going to Maryland, Pennsylvania, and California. So this is your chance to step up. We still have about seven states, it looks like, from the big board that haven't received roses yet, and one of those is West Virginia. So if you know somebody in West Virginia that's played an important role in your life, make that contribution now. Support public radio and put a smile on their faces, our faces, and your face as well at WITF.org/roses.
Yeah, it almost is like a country song. You could take the roses down a country road, Shenandoah River.
Are you stereotyping West Virginia there?
No,
Scott?
I am not. I love that song. Okay. I actually worked at a radio station in West Virginia at one time. Lovely state. I'm just saying, getting those in the mood, if you have a friend, a relative, a loved one living in West Virginia, it's not just West Virginia, but those other states as well. Tim, you've done this long enough that you can remember almost every year. We've gotten roses sent to all 50 states almost every year, right?
In the last few years, yeah. For a while there, we were always around 45, 47. We didn't get Alaska and Hawaii for a number of years, but the last few years we've been getting close to 50, so there have been some shirkers out there who haven't made sure that all 50 states have been taken care of.
Some shirkers.
You like that? I got to use that in the spelling bee when that's coming up.
Well, we do have that coming up in just a few weeks here at W. That's a Smart Talk program everyone looks forward to.
Right.
But one more time, where those who said, you know what, it is Valentine's Day coming up, I want to do this, how can they do it? 15 seconds or less.
1-800-233-9483 or WITF.org/roses.